TXFM presents. Album Anniversaries with Joe Donnelly.
This is Album Anniversaries on TXFM. It's Joe Donnelly here, and today I'm looking at an album that has lost none of its appeal or relevance 40 years since its release. Physical Graffiti is considered by many to be the apogee of Led Zeppelin's work, with songs like In My Time of Dying, Kashmir, and Trampled Underfoot. It's a double album of immense breadth and confidence. Music journalist Mick Wall has written books on AC/DC, Pearl Jam, Metallica, Lou Reed, and many others, but he has also written the excellent a biography of Led Zeppelin, When Giants Walk the Earth. Mick, hello.
Hello, Joe. How are you today?
Very well. And yourself?
Yes, I'm fine, thank you.
It is an album. I think confidence is one of the key words when you talk about Physical Graffiti, because the songs just come at you unashamedly.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost overconfidence, because, you know, it finds Led Zeppelin literally at the very, very peak of their powers. Almost like, you know, when you get a rose that is in full bloom and, you know, it's just a day away from starting to wither.
Yeah.
That's where they were with Physical Graffiti, and you can see that in the whole idea of making it a double album. They didn't need to do that. In fact, it cost them money to do that. Everybody, you know, from the commercial end argued against it for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
That wasn't a consideration. They just wanted to come out and make an enormous statement.
That's where I'd like to start. I mean, you've mentioned that Jimmy had always craved a double album. There were a couple of reasons why he craved a double album. Can you talk us through those? They had a backlog of material, firstly.
They did. I mean, the Physical Graffiti was built on 8 brand new tracks, which they recorded initially for what would be a regular single album, and would have made an extraordinary single album. That was down in Headley Grange, where a lot of Led Zeppelin 4 and earlier stuff had been recorded. But at that point, you know, Physical Graffiti was their 6th album. And they did have an enormous back catalogue of stuff. And you have to remember, back in 1974, when they were putting the album together, the whole idea of one day putting out a box of rarities or outtakes, or that concept just simply did not exist. If a track didn't make it onto an album, it was considered lost forever. But what Led Zeppelin had were a whole series of songs that really were as good as anything they'd done on album. And Jimmy just decided that, hey, why don't we put all these other great tracks together and turn one amazing album into a double magnificent, glorious statement. The other big reason, of course, was because, you know, the early to mid 70s was the era of the album, was the era of huge statements. Zeppelin had never been a singles band. Their entire reputation as artists rested solely on their albums. And, you know, the Rolling Stones had had a huge success with Exile on Main Street just a couple of years before. Bob Dylan had sealed his reputation forever just a few years before that with Blonde on Blonde.
Yeah. The Who.
And, of course, The Who,
yeah.
That's probably the best example of all, because The Who were an extremely exciting singles-oriented band that had never really cracked America. Next thing, they do the world's first rock opera, a double album, which suggested that they could not have done it any other way. This stuff was so amazing. It could only be, you know, expressed properly on a double album.
It certainly was. It's a kind of a status symbol. There is something else, though, that I wanted to talk to you about, Mick, and it's something that doesn't quite get as much exposure. Jimmy Page wanted to nail the dissenters.
He did. I mean, this is an interesting point you raised there, Joe, because it's almost a recurring theme throughout Zeppelin's career. You know, after the huge success of Led Zeppelin 2 with A Whole Lot of Love and all those great tracks, the follow-up, Led Zeppelin 3, attracted none of the critical acclaim, very little of the same commercial success as Led Zeppelin 2. And although it's a marvellous album, Led Zeppelin 3, where it left them when they went in to make Led Zeppelin 4, the album with Stairway to Heaven, with Black Dog, with every single track a classic, they were in a headspace that was like, well, you know, you didn't understand or get or like our last album. Well, now we're really going to show you. And that resulted in Led Zeppelin 4. Very similar situation with Physical Graffiti. Their fifth album, the follow-up to Zep 4, Houses of the Holy, very similar to Led Zep 3 in so much as they kind of took their foot off the pedal. They experimented. You've got reggae on Houses of the Holy. You've got funk. You've got electronica. What you don't have is an enormous dinosaur of a rocker like Black Dog. You don't have a big cathedral-like moment in Stairway to Heaven. It's a much more relaxed, experimental, fun album. And it just wasn't taken seriously. So now it's like, okay, now we're really going to show you.
Yeah.
And so all the bases were loaded in terms of saying, not only does this next Zeppelin album have to be better than anything we've done before, but it has to be grander. It has to make a huge statement, a kind of, it doesn't matter whether you like it or hate it, you have to applaud the achievement. And you know, frankly, that's exactly what we ended up with. I mean, these days, Physical Graffiti tends to be regarded as the very pinnacle of the Zeppelin catalogue.
It contains one of their songs that became a kind of a hallmark track, along with Whole Lot of Love and Stairway to Heaven, and that's Kashmir, which, like so many songs, it just had an inauspicious start. It was Jimmy and John Bonham just jamming at Headley Grange, just kind of working it out.
Yeah, it was. I mean, John and Jimmy were very much the night owls of Led Zeppelin at that point. And John was always much more of inspiration musically to Jimmy than either of the other two members. Robert wrote great lyrics and was a fantastic singer. Jonesy could play any instrument you put into his hands, a huge benefit to someone like Jimmy, who was never genre specific. He was always interested in all kinds of different music. But in terms of the real kind of the blood and guts of Led Zeppelin, Jimmy once said to me, you know, he had the perfect hooligan drummer.
Yeah.
And he didn't mean his offstage antics. He meant in his playing. You had this incredible force. And he said it was always a matter of knowing when to bring John in, when to unleash those cannons, as he used to put it. And Bonham is the one who sets, in every sense, literal and figuratively, sets the pace in Kashmir by coming up with this incredibly humongous groove, but that's also extremely atmospheric. And it was off the back of that that Page kind of extemporized and started to make this very kind of spacey, atmospheric music that Robert then kind of, you know, put the icing on the cake with you know, probably the most extraordinary lyrics he ever wrote.
But even in the production, it's the strings, it's the orchestration which gives Kashmir an utterly unique and easily identifiable sound, isn't it? I mean, the opening 3 or 4 seconds, you go Kashmir.
Well, this comes back to Jimmy Page's extraordinary background and interest in all kind, what these days we call world music. I mean, we see it very much in the Robert Plant latter solo years, his interest in all kinds of ethnic musics. But he learned that from Jimmy Page. And in fact, Jimmy and Robert had traveled to Cairo not long before they went in to make Physical Graffiti and recorded a couple of Zeppelin songs with some classical Indian musicians. Before they got to Cairo, and then in Cairo with Egyptian musicians, they were always very, very, very interested in you know, Jimmy was the first person, long before George Harrison or Brian Jones, to have a sitar in Britain. So he'd been to Ravi Shankar concerts back in the mid 60s, long before Led Zeppelin. So he really did have this full spectrum view of how music could be, but kind of channeled into this rock format that was a la mode in the early 70s.
And of course, he wasn't going to abandon his trademark blues sound, and in several songs on Physical Graffiti, you know, there were borrowings, I suppose you could say.
Well, I think every Led Zeppelin album, yes, you could certainly find borrowings. They've taken a lot of stick for this over the years, and rightly so in many cases, because they were so shameless with it. But, you know, so were pretty much everybody else in those days. I think with Zeppelin, though, they appropriated that music and did turn it into, sonically, something that only they could have come up with. It doesn't alter the fact, of course, that, you know, Custard Pie, for instance, can be traced back to a Blind Boy Fuller 1939 recording called I Want Some Pie, which later got redone by Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee as Custard Pie Blues. Mm. And they kind of try and disguise this with Robert kind of stealing the lyrics from a completely different
song, yeah,
by Sleepy John Estes called Drop Down Mama.
It's quite remarkable. The Boogie with Stu story is particularly kind of amusing in a way, because it was a reworking of a Ritchie Valens song, and then they wanted to credit Ritchie Valens' mother, but then they ended up getting a lawsuit on foot of that.
Yeah, talk about irony, yeah. You know, I mean, especially in the 70s when Zeppelin wouldn't admit to anything. I mean, these days, you know, Willie Dixon and Little Minnie and all these people get credits on the contemporary versions of those early albums. But Boogie with Stu is essentially just a jam of Ooh My Head by Ritchie Valens, which actually was itself not much more than a reworking, shall we say, of Little Richard's Ooh My Soul. But because, you know, Ritchie Valens had not died a wealthy man, and they heard that his mother, you know, could use some money. Well, they tried to make it so that because Valens never got any royalties for any of his songs. It was a terribly sad story. So they tried to arrange it that his mother would get a taste from Boogie with Stu. But in fact, his mother went the extra yard and said, "You know what? I'll sue you for the whole thing."
Yeah. Well, they kind of brought it on themselves. Let's take a song, Mick. I'd like you to choose one of your favorite tracks from Physical Graffiti. Of course, they're all great, especially if you're a fan. But if you want to choose one that we could play, I know there's quite a few to choose from.
Well, I mean, there really is quite a few to choose from. I think you know, the obvious ones we know, Kashmir, In My Time of Dying, you know, all the big numbers. I think for me, if it was just a kind of a groovy rock and roll, where were Led Zeppelin actually at that point in their careers, then I'd choose a track called Sick Again, which, if you listen closely to the lyrics, it's all about LA teenage queens and all kinds of shenanigans. Yes, that was the word I was searching for, Joe.
No, it's about one. Well, it even mentions one in particular, doesn't it?
It does indeed, yeah. But it's a completely salacious, unapologetically early 70s get down on it kind of a song, but it's done in that fantastic Stonesy groove that really did only exist at that time. I mean, everybody's tried to imitate it since, but
not possible. Not possible.
Well, you can build a pyramid, but it don't make you an Egyptian, you know.
That's the quote of the interview. We'll press release that. Let's have a listen to Sick Again from Led Zeppelin, and then we'll be back with Mick Wall in just a sec. That was Sick Again from Led Zeppelin. You're listening to Album Anniversaries, and I am talking to music journalist and the author of a biography of Led Zeppelin, When Giants Walk the Earth. It is Mick Wall. Physical Graffiti is 40 years old. Mick, I did want to ask you about two words that you have used to describe Physical Graffiti: brutal and uncompromising. And you used it in a sentence where you also used the word mature. Explain what you mean by that.
Brutal and uncompromising. Well, I think brutal in the sense that the power, you know, this is an album where people talk about Led Zeppelin too, which very powerful, but very slick in many ways. I mean, very polished and finessed and just very sexy record. Led Zeppelin 4, you know, When the Levee Breaks, Black Dog, these are monolithic tracks, but they're standalone moments interspersed with acoustic numbers and you know, different contexts and contrasts. Physical Graffiti, I think, taken as a whole, is brutal in its impact. You know, if they had stuck with the original eight tracks they'd recorded, which included Custard Pie and Trampled Underfoot, but also, you know, concentrated very much on Kashmir, My Time of Dying, 10 Years Gone, In the Light. You know, these are, any one of these would have been classics on their earlier albums. To see them stacked up against each other one by one, it's almost too much to take. You know, in these days of 70-minute CDs, the concept of a double vinyl record is, unless you experienced it first time around, it's hard to recreate the impact that had. But at the time, it was nigh on impossible to listen to the whole album in one go. You had to pick your moment.
One of the most interesting aspects is that this album got the best reviews of any of their albums. And what we were talking about earlier, about how Zeppelin got an awful lot of stick, and especially in North America, it seemed that the music press just didn't like them because they couldn't understand why hordes of young suburban teenage boys and girls would go to these concerts, buy the records. They just didn't seem to get it. Physical Graffiti finally put an end to that, did it?
It did. Their time had come. And I mean, there were two crucial things to this. The rock press in America of the late 60s and early 70s, you have to remember there was no rock press just 5 years before. Rolling Stone magazine didn't exist before 1968, you know. Those rock critics had their calling card was Bob Dylan, was the Beatles, at a stretch, Jimi Hendrix. They were making fun of Jim Morrison and the Doors. You know, these were beard-stroking, serious musicologists for whom rock and roll was politics, was, you know, the message is the medium is the message. They had a very serious, heavy agenda. And what freaked them out most, I think, about Led Zeppelin was, Zeppelin was the very first band they had ever come across that they had not discovered for themselves and written about and idealized and analyzed and it was a much younger non-music paper buying audience was immediately into them. You know, if you went to a Zeppelin show in New York in 1970, as a very good friend of mine did, he said the thing that he remembered most was the sheer noise of the crowd. He'd covered the Beatles and the Stones in their heyday. He had never been to a show where there was such an intense amount of energy and noise and firecrackers and screaming and lots of girls, but lots of boys
lots
as
of
well.
Lots of boys as well, yeah.
And of course, as Page, you know, has explained over the years, the whole purpose for him of a Led Zeppelin live show was almost ritualistic. It was to be as hypnotic and as involved and as closed a shop as possible. They weren't there to impress the critics on Rolling Stone or Circus magazine. They were there to blow the minds of the next generation. So it wasn't until 1975 when some of that next generation had actually gone on to write for the papers themselves, like Cameron Crowe famously. Lester Bangs, others of their ilk, that understood that Zeppelin were an extremely serious proposition indeed. I mean, Physical Graffiti came out at a time when the Stones essentially were over as a recording outfit. At a time, you know, when the Beatles had been broken up for 5 years. At a time when David Bowie was going through a very confused period of his career. We had glam rock over here, and over there they had Fleetwood Mac and the Eagles. You know, there wasn't a precedent. The map hadn't been drawn until Led Zeppelin came along and went where no band had ever wanted to go before.
arguably, musically, no one has really got there since. We're going to conclude with another choice of track, if you'd like to choose one, Mick. We had Sick Again earlier on. What do you think you'd like to go for now?
I'd like to go for one of the most atmospheric tracks on the album, and that's In the Light. I love the beginning. I love the way it contains the blues and all that stuff, but also a kind of perverse glimpse of the future. There's something very occult and atmospheric about that track, and it's one of my all-time favourites.
From Physical Graffiti, which is 40 years old, journalist Mick Wall and author of A Biography of Led Zeppelin, When Giants Walk the Earth. Thank you so much for taking the time. It's been an absolute pleasure, Mick.
Always a pleasure to speak to you, Joe. Always.
TXFM presents Album Anniversaries with Joe Donnelly.